And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Mitch Pump, co-host Dan Ford. How you doing, Dan?
Welcome!
That was a recording on
St. Patrick's Day.
That was a high-impact welcome you had there. You were into... This was some Owen Hart-era high energy you were bringing to this opening.
Well, I'm going to warn you now, I'm a little drunk. St. Patrick's Day. Honoring our Irish brethren by embracing alcoholism. And I may go get some potatoes later.
I'm a big fan of baked potatoes. I don't know if it's cool to be into baked potatoes anymore.
No, but are Irish people into baked potatoes?
Aren't they?
Well, they couldn't afford like ovens and stuff, though. They just ate them raw. Or they had to make them in stews.
Boiled potatoes, right? I never know because everything in England is so disgusting food-wise that it becomes difficult. Like, British people have the palate of, like, a monkey's backside.
But it's why, you know, British people, though, do love curry.
But I bet it's all, like, really nasty curries that are, like, all
It might
up.
Be, but, like, they, like, people are like, I wonder how, like, England became so, like, imperialistic and had the empire. Like, those people tasted curry once. And
they're just like, I must own this. I must.
Like, we will kill anybody in our way to get to these spices that you speak of. Because, like, spices don't grow naturally in, like, England area, right?
I'm not sure what spices need to grow. I just know that traditionally.
Well, how do spices work? Today's podcast.
Spice Cast.
Spice Cast.
Sponsored by the Spice Council.
I don't know what a spice comes from. I'll be honest. I have no idea. Salt? Like rocks?
I don't know enough about Indian food because I've never been to an Indian restaurant. There's none of them near me that I would eat at.
Well, Dan, we are living in opposite worlds because near me there are tons of Indian restaurants.
Well, I've lived near Indian restaurants before, but they always look so nasty from the outside. Like, you know the shady Chinese restaurants that you'll pass by?
Those are like,
I'm not eating there. I'm sorry.
But those are the best ones.
I'm not. I'm not eating at a place where, like, the sign looks like it's going to fall down.
Well, no. When they have, like, a health rating of D+, and it's, like, in the window because they're proud of it.
It's like, it came up, y'all.
But that's the place I want to eat at for, like, immigrant food. It's, like, the nastier the better.
I would rather not get the norovirus myself. I did once walk into a Mexican restaurant near me. And I walked in, and it was mostly a bar, but they also did, like, tacos and stuff. But their clientele were mostly Hispanic, like, actual, like, people of Latin
descent. So you should eat there.
So I walk in, and I'm looking around, and then I see the sanitation grade, and it was 79. And that was, all right, let's wheel on out of here. It looked like the Abe Simpson gif, around, get out of here.
Let me Matumbo you here. Abe, 79, not the worst rating for a restaurant.
That's low enough in North Carolina that you have like 2 weeks
before
you get closed.
Because a 79 could be like, I put bleach on the wrong shelf.
No, not here, brother. Not here.
I don't know. And like, if all the Hispanic people are eating there, it's probably good.
Brother... I don't know how it is in Georgia, but in North Carolina, anything below a 90, and you got shit somewhere in there.
Oh, bro. In Georgia, if it's below an 80, especially in Atlanta, go there. what that usually means is, like, they got fined for, like, rules that, like, make sense, but, like, you probably don't think about at home. You don't even follow in, like, your own refrigerator. Like, they probably put, like, seafood above meat on the shelf. Which you're not supposed to do, and, like, stuff like that. That's probably why you see a rating go down like that sometimes.
I've gotten especially severe here. Food poisoning from places that had a North Carolina rating of, like, 94.
That could have just been you.
I I feel like somebody wasn't wearing gloves and got some I got feel some here, raw chicken on some on my nachos.
I feel here in God's country, Georgia. If you were to go to see Abdullah's barbecue ribs, you don't want to see a 94. You want to see like a 75, because you know that guy's cooking ribs like a guy in the back country would really cook ribs.
See, around here. And we've got a local Chinese place, which is actually delicious. But I've never seen them have a sanitation grade above 92. That's the highest I ever saw them get.
Yeah, you don't. If you see 100, get the fuck out.
And I don't want to eat it. And I happen to just know for a fact they've always had a rat problem. They have always had rats.
I know around where I am, the best food, the best Chinese, the best barbecue, etc., you got to have that health rating below, like, 85.
Yeah. See, I think in North Carolina, if you're sub-85, like, if you get that low, you have, like, a month to get it up, or else they close you down.
No. Or maybe where you are. Like, to close down around here, you have to have, like a 60.
Yeah, in North Carolina, I think it's either 90 or 85. If you get below that, they close you down. So that means that we have, like, massive grade inflation, where, like, places that are completely disgusting have, like, a 92. Yeah. Because you don't want to write down that they're below the fucking line.
But, like, also what a lot of people don't understand is, like, your kitchen would probably get, like, a failing grade, these health inspections.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I think a lot of times we're like, well, they got a 50, and it's like, yeah, there's probably some gross stuff, but probably not that much grosser than your kitchen.
Okay, I gotta let you know, if you got a 50 in North Carolina, you're literally cooking with your own feces. It's not possible to get a grade that low here.
That's how you make good barbecue.
Like, you just have a turd in one hand and, like, a bottle of AIDS in the other.
Okay.
And you're just mixing them in.
A lot. So, man, 50 was an exaggeration, but if you got like a 75,
yeah,
it's probably gross.
If you got a 75 in North Carolina, they caught you just vomiting into the stew.
Dude, I've seen kitchens that have gotten like an 80.
That's a Georgia 80. I'm just telling you that the states have a different scale.
Maybe I think it's probably different town to town. It's like a local government agency, right, that does food inspection?
Well, the county does it here.
The county. That's how we do it, I believe.
And magically, the places in the county seat, Elizabethtown, tend to get a lot more leeway than all the places outside. Like, so if you're in, like, Tar Heel, North Carolina, your shit better be spick and span or else they're slapping that 88 on you. Whereas if you go to Elizabethtown, there might not be a floor, but magically it's got a 93.
Well, that's how you know it's good barbecue, though. No floor.
Yeah, y'all don't have good barbecue, though, because you're in Georgia.
I'm sorry, we don't have good barbecue?
Yeah, Georgia's not known for their barbecue, my friend. Like, outside of the state of Georgia, nobody talks about Georgia barbecue.
No, Georgia barbecue's not a thing, but, like, because we're a blend of everyone else. We're not just putting, like, a bunch of, semen or whatever you do in North Carolina for your barbecue.
North Carolina routinely wins barbecue contests nationwide. We have one of the most popular styles of barbecue in the country.
Well, damn, because we are a melting pot and not a segregated area. We invite everyone.
We've got two different barbecue styles in North Carolina. Two competing barbecue styles.
I just know I can go to multiple places and get different types of barbecue. But that's what Georgia is, though. That's what we are, the New York.
Yeah, but see, the thing about being a melting pot of barbecue styles is that you're right next door to South Carolina, which is disgusting. But yet you've let them in. You've let their parasitic barbecue infest.
Who eats? But Carolina barbecue is the one with, like, mayonnaise in it or something weird?
No, South Carolina barbecue has mustard in it. That shit's okay, gross.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, that's. No one's doing that here.
South Carolina barbecue is literally the most disgusting shit you've ever eaten in your life. North Carolina Georgia barbecue
tends to be, like, a little more sweet. Like, we tend to be a little more Tennessee style.
Tennessee barbecue is also terrible. North Carolina barbecue, you have the two styles. You have Eastern barbecue near the coast, and then you got Western barbecue, where I'm from. And the Eastern North Carolina barbecue is very, very vinegary. it's really a lot of vinegar. Just
yeah,
tons and tons of vinegar.
Well, no, I thought the thing with Carolina barbecue is like you put slaw in it.
Well, Western style barbecue, you have tomato based sauce. I mean, it's still got vinegar. You do need vinegar in barbecue, but it's not all vinegar. It's like a tomato based sauce in the meat, and then you make a special kind of what's called barbecue slaw, which has ketchup in it, and it is delicious.
I like the way y'all do your sandwiches, though. I like the coleslaw on the sandwich.
Yep. Okay. That and both Eastern and Western have coleslaw on the sandwiches. It's just
no. I think that's a good. I think for barbecue, that's one of the best toppings.
Yes. Eastern style though, they use coleslaw. Like,
but Dan, did you know that coleslaw? Georgia barbecue was the first barbecue in space.
Well, if we ever because get aliens coming at Georgia? Us in vengeance, that'll be why.
No, Georgia barbecue. Fincher's barbecue of Macon, Georgia. I believe it was Sonny Carter brought it into space with him. And Fincher's, if you're ever in the middle of Georgia region, check it out.
We all know that there's really only three styles of barbecue anybody actually eats.
Kansas City, Memphis.
Memphis, Carolina, and Texas. That's, I mean, because Kansas City claims they're different from Memphis, but they're just Memphis.
No, Kansas City gets it over Texas.
But Texas is a distinct style that people like. It's all beef. There's nothing but beef. They don't make anything but beef.
Oh, then that's not barbecues with pork, dude. Everyone knows that. And chicken.
Brisket.
Barbecue. Brisket. That's New York style barbecue.
That's Jew boy barbecue.
That's Jew York barbecue, boy.
I'll tell you this, Memphis barbecue is hella overrated.
I worked at a Memphis barbecue place, and I agree.
It's just ribs. Like, and ribs are fine, but, like, it's just fucking ribs. Like, how many fucking ribs can you eat in your life?
So, yeah, I do agree. Georgia barbecue is the best. Let's move on.
Even Michael Hayes wouldn't say Georgia barbecue's the best. And that's his whole deal, is that Georgia's the best of all the best states.
No, Georgia barbecue is the best because we're a melting pot.
Nobody has ever heard of Georgia barbecue.
Because we don't have a Georgia
just saying is that there
Georgia
is no
barbecue.
There is no such thing as Georgia barbecue. It's just you can go in Atlanta and find a Memphis barbecue place.
Yes.
Like, you don't actually
Georgia
have
barbecue.
Any barbecue.
We're a conglomerate.
You just are big enough that you've got, like, a North Carolina barbecue restaurant.
No, Dan, we're not big enough. We're the only good place to live in the South. And we
Houston is going to be so pissed off at you.
That's the Southwest.
Nope, Houston's South. Dallas is Southwest, Houston is South.
The South ends at the Mississippi line.
New Orleans is absolutely South.
Where's the Mississippi River? That's where the South ends.
Nope.
Yep.
Houston is a southern town.
You're in the central time zone. How are you in the South?
90% of the South is in the central time zone.
That doesn't count. The only real South.
The entire SEC is in the South, is in the central time zone. Except
no, the good teams aren't. Well, only one good team. Auburn's barely in the central.
They are absolutely in the central time zone, though.
Tennessee, but barely.
Kentucky, Vanderbilt.
Auburn's literally 5 minutes away from
there's the only time. Three schools in the SEC that are in the Eastern time zone.
South Carolina,
Georgia, and Florida. That's it.
Tennessee.
No. Tennessee's in the central.
Knoxville's not in the central. I thought Knoxville's Eastern Tennessee.
Yeah, but like the central time zone starts like basically once you cross like the Tennessee border.
I thought it starts when you cross the Alabama border.
I'm almost positive Knoxville's is in the central time zone.
I think you're wrong.
Kentucky might be in the Eastern time zone.
No, Tennessee further east than Kentucky.
I don't know where Lexington is, so I'm saying maybe because I don't know. I don't know because I know Louisville is in the Eastern time zone.
Okay,
Knoxville
I think is central, but part of Tennessee is in the Eastern.
Yeah, Pigeon Forge, basically. That's it. like Gatlinburg.
Literally, the dick of Tennessee. But all of Georgia is, so it doesn't really make sense.
You know why? Because Georgia is the only proper state in the SEC territory.
Well, Georgia's also the only state in the South that, like, was, like, a big prima donna. But if you look through the history of Georgia, Georgia's, like, the biggest, like, baby bitch.
But Houston, of, like, Houston is straight up a southern as southern can be southern city.
Are they?
All that entails.
What's their SEC team?
Texas A&M.
That's not in Houston. That's in College Station. It's
basically Houston. It's as close to Houston as Tuscaloosa is to Birmingham.
This could be a future show. Can we talk about how dumb NBA geography is sometimes?
Yeah, I've always hated what baseball did after the strike when they changed all the divisions around, but the one thing is that they finally moved the Atlanta Braves out of the Western Division, which they had been in for 60 years, basically. Just because when the Braves moved from Milwaukee to Atlanta, they just left them in their old division.
Well, Dan, look at what happened when the I'm sure the Panthers moved too, but like when the Saints, Falcons, Bucks all moved to the NFC South, they all got a lot better.
I'm trying to remember
that's
what division.
Played once a week.
The Panthers were in the same division, weren't they? They were in the West.
Were they in the West or the Central or the East or something weird?
There wasn't a Central. Oh, no. They were not in the Central. Tampa was in the Central.
Tampa was in the Central.
They were not in the East. They were in the West. They were in the
West.
They just put them in the West because that's where the Falcons and the Saints were.
And look how much better, though, the NFC South got. Where, like, what, in the past, this century, I think they're the division that sent every team to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's funny how when you're no longer having to make, like, three trips a year to the other coast as part of a division.
And that's once a week, Dan. Football is the one sport where I think divisions don't matter. They matter, but not as much. And then, like, you look at the NBA, and I was looking at the map the other day, and it's like, why are the Minnesota Timberwolves flying out to the Northwest?
To be fair to Minnesota, to be fair to the NBA on that,
Minnesota's
there's
closer
no
to
division
Detroit.
You could put them in where it's going to be great.
The Central.
The Eastern Central Division.
No, yeah, but they're closer. They're not that. They're closer to Detroit, Indiana, Chicago, all those teams.
Yeah.
Milwaukee.
That's where they belong, but that division's already full, isn't it?
No, you could. Well, if you did expansion, you could make it work, but you got to kind of.
I mean, basically, if you add the Sonics, the first thing you do is move Minnesota to the East.
No, yeah,
the
you
Sonics
could do that
in their spot in their division.
But you have to move the Thunder down to the Southwest, probably,
and then move Memphis to the Eastern Division, like the Southeast Division.
Or if you added a team from Vegas, you could put Vegas and Pacific, move Phoenix up to the Northwest, which sounds like it makes no sense. Until you realize Utah and Denver are in the Northwest.
You got to put Vegas in the same division as Phoenix, though, because those cities hate each other.
Yeah, but Vegas and Phoenix probably have to go with the California division. With Sacramento, LA.
Yeah, I don't think the NBA works in Vegas. I think that's a bad move.
No, I don't think. I think like people would think, you know, NBA does expansion. It's probably two teams. We'd probably do Seattle, more than likely. I think that, like, Kansas City or Louisville or, like, Virginia Beach make more sense than Vegas. Vegas is, like, kind of not a very, like...
Vegas only makes sense for the NFL.
No, Vegas doesn't... Vegas is really white, and I don't know how well the NBA is going to be accepted there in, like, a kind of like a Nazi town that is Vegas.
And I would just say, above and beyond that, it's a really poor working class. Like, I don't think you're able to sell season tickets for 40 games, you know? I think you will really struggle with that, or with baseball, where it's like, you know, 80-some
games.
Yeah,
and then I realized this was probably closer to 15 to 20 years ago. But when the NBA did their All-Star game in Vegas, it was a disaster. Not because of people acting wrong or whatever. Because, like, Vegas was really racist.
Yeah.
And that's, like, the thing. Like, the NBA makes sense in Vegas. until you realize, like, the demographic issues. And, like, Vegas is, like, a bigger MAGA place than you think. And, like, I don't know how accepting they'll be towards an NBA team when they already have the Raiders and hockey, and a really successful hockey team. So, like,
hockey,
if I'm the NBA,
hockey is low risk enough, and, like, the NHL kind of accepts that their Sun Belt teams are going to have bad attendance sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's not, like, that big a deal to them. And in the NFL, like, because it's coming in on weekends, you can just, like, the casinos will just buy up all the tickets and comp them, and then it'll be full, and it'll look like they won't have problems. Plus, it's a once-a-week thing, and it's only 8 games. Like, that's a perfect thing for the...
And the team moving there is literally probably, what, a top 5 in terms of best brand in the NFL?
I mean, I would imagine they probably have more fans, because, like, who go and live in Las Vegas and work there, it's mostly people from, like, the shit-ass end of California who, instead of living in Fresno, you know, they go and they move to Vegas and work in the hospitality industry. But it's like, well, yeah, what is the official team of every shitty place in California? It's the Raiders.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but, like, you look at the Raiders brand and their colors and everything else, like, they're an easy team to sell to, like, a new market. Like, better than, say, and, like, they're better run at this point, but, like, better than, like, the Chiefs move to Vegas. Like, the Raiders are going to sell well. People know who the Oakland Raiders, or know who the Raiders of the NFL are. And their jerseys look cool. Black and silver's cool.
And they're going to have Antonio Brown.
Yeah. You want to talk about that before we kind of get going? Some of this NFL craziness?
Yeah.
When did the NFL turn into the NBA?
I don't understand. The Giants. Well, I knew the Giants had kind of screwed up when they hired Dave Gettleman.
Yeah.
Because it's like, he's one of the few general managers in the NFL I know, because he's been the Panthers general manager forever. And it's like, oh, don't you want the guy who never could put any talent around Cam Newton? Oh, don't you want the guy who wasted Steve Smith's entire career? Here we go. Like, you know, he's just like, he has no eye for top-end talent. And, the best player on the Giants.
But, if you're the Giants probably... Maybe when they drafted Beckham, it was probably a good idea. But they probably never should have re-signed Beckham. Because that team's clearly rebuilding, and if you're rebuilding...
Well, then they should have really drafted a quarterback last year instead of re-signing Eli.
Well, they took Barkley. Yeah. They went all in on Eli. Or they could have signed somebody.
Like, what was the point of drafting? Traded, like, you only draft Barkley if you think that your team's not actually that bad.
No, you draft Barkley if you think, okay, we had injuries this year, but the defense is there. We slipped up. We're
and,
a player
and
away.
We just lucked into, like, the one guy who could be the difference maker.
Yeah.
And he's Barkley, not the guy you draft if your team just straight up sucks.
No, if you need a new quarterback. Because when you have a new quarterback in, you kind of want a veteran running back there who, like, understands how quick pass pro needs to be taken and all that stuff. I get trading OBJ, though, if I'm New York. I thought they probably could have gotten more. That was my one issue, was why is there not a second rounder in there? Give me 1, 2, 3 for Odell.
Yeah, I don't understand what they're doing.
My thing is, like, I don't understand not cutting Eli or doing this other stuff. I don't get...
Of course, if you're keeping Eli, why do you need Odell? Because Eli can't throw a pass farther than 5 yards anyway. So if you really are just going to stick with him, then, you know, piss on it.
Yeah, I don't get keeping Eli. I understand trading Odell, and I think that's a good move. I would have gotten more, but whatever. Maybe you can't. I don't know that, because I'm not in the talks.
But Cleveland now has a young quarterback played really well. They've got a new offensive season, and they've got a hell of an offensive weapon for him to, you know, to throw to.
I don't know if we talk about this enough. They've got a young quarterback with confidence. Confidence, lots, to me, in an athlete, such a big deal these days. Like, if I get a guy who A is talented, but B knows he's talented. I want to ride with that guy in modern sports.
Yeah, you know, there's something like, for that, but you know, you don't want to get Johnny Manziel, who's so confident that he got himself run out of Canada.
No, of course, but he never had the talent.
I think he did have the talent. He was just sort of an alcoholic.
No, yeah, that was the issue. But two, he wasn't talented enough to, like, say, overcome those issues. And B, how much of that was probably just Mike Evans was really good in college, and we don't recognize that.
It's a good point. And he had a great offensive line. Mike Evans
was probably low-key one of the best college receivers that no one ever talks about. When you look at some of the stuff he caught for Manziel...
Especially if you ever go and you watch the Alabama win, where it's like literally Johnny Manziel has like a defensive lineman draped on him and he just throws some like prayer, like just an absolute shot in the dark prayer, and Mike Evans just goes up and gets it.
Yeah. And a lot of that stuff was Manziel like getting out of pressure, so good for him because like O-line clearly was not good.
No, their offensive line was awesome. It was just Alabama.
Actually, it was. It had DJ Fluker on it.
Yeah, Manziel's off. He inherited an NFL quality offensive line. That's the only thing Mike Sherman was good at, was developing offensive lines. That's why the team fell apart as soon as all of Mike Sherman's recruits were gone. Because once you no longer had Mike Sherman's offensive lineman recruiting and development, suddenly it was just like, hey, take the snap and pray.
But I just feel like if we could go back and examine the Manziel legacy. I'm sorry, Dan. Oh, no. We've got some breaking news.
Uh-oh.
Giannis is on the floor grabbing his knee right now.
Jesus.
Oh, no, he's okay. He's back.
Oh, he was just milking. He was just milking something.
No, he's limping. I think he rolled his ankle or sprained his knee, but it's nothing bad. Okay. Or maybe we'll learn in a couple of days.
Don't scare me, brother.
Hey, if you're Budenholzer, yank him out of the game. Let's not keep playing the guy.
Yeah, let's take it easy on old Giannis.
You might want your 6'11" point forward to be at full strength come playoffs.
Let's take it easy on the meal ticket.
I think when we go back and examine Manziel, I think we got to realize like a lot of that was probably just Mike Evans and his surrounding talent was so good. And I think a lot of that too is Mike Evans was low key one of the best receivers I've ever seen in college.
Yeah,
how about that?
Yeah, he was, and he was just so fucking big.
I thought he was a tight end the first time I saw him. Legit, I went to my friend and I go, who's this tight end for A&M? Because that's a receiver. That's how big that guy was in college. Like, he was like Gronk, a wide receiver in college.
God. You remember watching Gronk at Arizona?
I have no memory of Gronk in college, actually.
He was on those Nick Foles teams.
Yeah, I have no memory of, like, the Pac-12 around then, because I was just in a, like, personally
actually,
in a different
place. Actually, he might not have played with Nick Foles. Or he might have been there for Nick Foles' like, freshman year.
Okay. Yeah, because Gronk's pretty old.
Well, he's not as old as you think, but he's old and he's tight end ancient, because tight ends usually...
No, he's almost 30.
Yeah, he's, like, 31 or 32.
Yeah.
But for a tight end, that makes you, like, 100 years old.
Yeah. So let's move on to our topic for the day. We're going to talk athletes who failed in business, Dan.
God. I just love, like, poorly thought out business things. It's one of my favorite things. And I know some people might not enjoy it as much, but man, I just love it when somebody comes up with like a business idea that absolutely has zero chance of success.
Let's start with old school. This is probably one a lot of people don't know about too, because it happened so long ago. Johnny Unitas lost all the money he made in football in bowling alleys and a circuit company.
So this is a particular genre of athlete financial failure, and mm-hmm. it is trying to capitalize on a trendy thing when you were young that you thought was always going to be popular. And then it turns out, nope, there's a threshold on that. I enjoy bowling. I don't know if you were a bowler.
Bowling's fun, yeah.
But what people may not realize is that in the 50s, bowling was one of the most popular recreational activities in the country. There was a huge bowling bonanza. And a lot of it was driven by the fact that when television first came around in the 50s, there were a limited number of things that you could realistically broadcast on television that wouldn't look like ass. And one of them was bowling, because bowling is pretty simple to broadcast. It's just one guy with a ball in a lane, and you just have to do the one cut from when he, you know, throws the shot down to, you know, when he, you know, when the ball hits the pins. It's pretty simple, you know. And so there was this huge spike in the popularity of bowling based on people watching it on television. Once the fad of bowling being one of the only, you know, as television got more developed and there were more things on television, you know, a lot of the early things on television, they dropped them off because they had kind of rode them all the way down. Pro wrestling is an example of that, where there was like a huge pro wrestling recession in the 60s. Because, you know, it had been on television at that point for 10 years. It was like, okay, I'm sick of this. Bowling went through the same thing. And so there was a massive bowling recession all over the country because you'd had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bowling alleys opened up to take advantage of this fad, and then once the fad ended, guess what? Everybody lost their ass. And Johnny Unitas was one of them. And can you imagine a more when you watch like old Flintstones cartoons when you were a kid, like Fred being a bowler, that was always weird to me because I didn't know anybody who bowled. Like, why is Fred Flintstone and all of his friends always bowling? But it's because it's a cartoon from the 50s, and that's what people did in the 50s. So Johnny Unitas was the victim of trying to chase a fad, and then the fad ended.
No, and I think with bowling, too, like, the popularity, especially is bigger, like, up north. Like, that's, like, why it's a weird thing for us as Southerners. But this was, like, in the industrial age where, like, most factories were located up north in the Midwest. And so you had a lot of people moving to those areas. That's where the jobs were. And what are you going to do on a Thursday night in February in Minnesota?
Right. I mean,
because you stay home, you're going to drink. If you don't do that stuff, you're going to be active. You're probably going to go bowl or play basketball.
Or go to see Vern Gagne's AWA.
Yeah. So I think that's a big thing with the bowling. And, like, maybe the reason, like, those alleys never really worked in the South was, A, it's not a cultural thing. And that's kind of it, actually.
Well, there's only one A. It was even in the South, people bowled in the 50s. It was just a thing that people just like went, okay, yeah.
But that was more of the fad of, well, everyone else is bowling, we will. It wasn't ingrained in the culture of the South. Like, because I'm sure if you go to Minnesota or Pennsylvania today, there's still bowling leagues that are like very popular in small towns.
Well, bowling had a second peak, like, and that recession wore off too. You know, or we're in the middle of another bowling recession, because when bowling first got on ESPN, and like when we were in middle school, you know, suddenly all these bowling alleys popped back up again. So we've actually gone through another one of these, but you know, it's a tricky thing to try to something that seems like this is going to be popular forever, like. What's the big difference between, I don't know, what's a fad from the 50s? Muscle cars. Like, how do you know that muscle cars are still going to be around 70 years later, but bowling kind of isn't? Or, you know, frozen vegetable dinners or whatever. Actually, they still have frozen dinners, yeah. But still.
Next up, let's look at a pretty famous loser in sports and business, Bill Buckner, went broke after sinking in all the $6 million he earned playing baseball in a car dealership in Iowa. Bill Buckner, Dodge Chrysler Jeep dealership.
Man, that means he was jumping in right at... Okay, I can already tell you what killed him. I guarantee you, based on when he retired, when he bought into a Chrysler dealership, it was at its most expensive because that is when the minivan, because Dodge had the first minivan. That's when it had just hit, and Dodge was like the thing, was those Dodge minivans.
Dodge is still the only, I think they only, they're still the only company left that makes a minivan, right?
Right, but then... You know, and for a time, Dodge was like the number one auto seller in America based on the popularity of the minivan.
You want to get in on a dealership, because that's...
So I guarantee you, he paid the top price to get the dealership, like to get the affiliation. And then, you know, once the minivan cooled off a little bit, or you started having Ford and Chevrolet making their own minivans, and so Dodge is no longer has this huge sector to themselves. You know, the Jeep was super popular. The Jeep kind of cooled off a little bit.
No, and the Jeep. Man, can I say this as a guy who owned two Jeep Grand Cherokees? Car fucking sucks.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing.
After like 4 years. That's one of the worst cars you can own.
Yeah, but...
Everything in it breaks.
I mean, when you look at when he bought in to get that dealership, get that Dodge affiliation, the Jeep was the only sports utility vehicle. It was like the Ford Bronco and a Jeep. That's it.
That's
the only
probably
two
been, like,
you could get of that. And the Dodge was the only minivan. And then soon, once you start getting SUVs of all different kinds, it's like who wants to buy a Jeep? They drive like shit. They flip over easily. They get terrible gas mileage. Why wouldn't you just want to buy an Explorer? You know?
Let's move next up. And kind of stay in the past here before we kind of get to some more well-known present guys. But this guy's pretty well-known. Joe Louis went broke putting his name in front of everything. But... You have to realize this is kind of a sad story, too, because of the $4.6 million Joe Louis earned from 1935 to 1952, which I don't know what that calculates to today, but probably a good amount of money.
Yeah, I'll do some math on that. Keep talking.
He pocketed less than 20% of that money. Because he was, at all, in terms of American society back then, Joe Louis was a second-class citizen. And that's kind of the shame of this one.
He was also the most famous black man in America.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally, what, I guess
he was,
gone.
I mean, there's been people written that he was, because the period of American history from 1890 to about 1950-ish is probably the most intensely racist period in American history. You can make a pretty strong argument that was us at our absolute worst. Mm-hmm. And there's people who've written books about how Joe Louis is the figure who helped break that down because he whipped the Nazis. Like, when he beat the Nazi fighter in the Olympics and defended American honor. It wasn't the Olympics. It was a heavyweight championship fight.
Yeah.
It was like, Joe Louis was like the first black man who was an American hero.
Yeah. No, Joe Louis, like, probably, like, because we think of, in America, these things, like, we think of ourselves as being, like, a little more prestigious than we are. But, like, Joe Louis, in terms of importance for, helping to divide the racial gap or something, if you will, probably up there, like, MLK or anybody else, right? Like,
that is
the way Americans love sports and the way we look at it, like, you gotta think Joe Louis and, like, Hank Aaron, those guys... were so important to civil rights.
Willie Mays.
Because they showed, like, kids... It wasn't, like, the racist dad whose hearts they changed. It was the 10-year-old who went, well, fuck. Joe Louis can knock this guy out. These people are the same as me. Or Hank Aaron can hit the ball far. He's the same as me. You know?
$4.2 million is the equivalent today of $44 million.
Yeah.
So imagine he probably would have gotten, what, about $4 million? Probably out of what he made in today's money.
So you said he got 20% of it?
It's estimated pocketed less than 20%.
So that would be $8.8 million.
Yeah. But he put his name on a lot of different stuff. There was Joe Louis Restaurant, Joe Louis Milk Company, Joe Louis Punch, and Joe Louis PR Firm.
You know, just trying to,
Well, the other issue, too, is he had a corrupt business manager who, let's see here, a couple of the numerous poor business investments left the champ firm. So you had a guy taking advantage of him.
Yeah, Joe Louis.
I'm going to assume, too, Joe Louis probably didn't have the best financial education.
Joe Louis was one of those guys who, like, if you watch, like, 60s and 70s wrestling, he'll pop up as a referee for a lot of stuff. Which is always the sign that you fucked up royally with your finances.
No, and more than likely, Joe Louis probably didn't. It probably wasn't his fault.
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely no doubt.
Let's put this here. Joe Louis was taken advantage of, and that's a shame. Because, as we said, Dan, Joe Louis should probably be...
Joe Louis should have been like an American icon. Like,
no, in terms of pre-1950s America, he should be above Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
In terms of the American icon, because of what he did, what he had to go through, and how successful he was. Although, people always say Babe Ruth is probably secretly a black guy anyway, right? So maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I subscribe to that. I believe he was.
Do you buy that? Well, yeah. A lot of people do. That's why he was so dull.
I mean, I absolutely do for that basic reason. It's like, okay, because so what, the one guy... So suddenly somebody shows up into this sport and completely wrecks it, like breaks it on a fundamental level, where it no longer even makes sense. Like the statistics he's putting up no longer make sense in relation to the rest of the sport. It's like, yeah, he's probably the first black guy playing.
Yeah, or was he just really Italian? Sicilian, right?
I mean, that's basically the same thing.
Maybe to you. Not to me. The lead phrenologist. Is that the race science, right? Phrenology?
Phrenology. There's no T.
I'm the lead phrenologist at halfcarded.com, and I disagree.
That might not be true. You might have some competition.
I doubt it. Bring it. Bring it, Peach Machine. I'll whip out my caliper. School your ass. Let's move to this one before we get to like a little more modern. We're slowly creeping in there. Lenny Dykstra.
Jesus, Lenny Dykstra. Now, if you were somebody who read a lot of sports blogs, like in the early Obama years, Lenny Dykstra, there was like 100 different articles written about how Lenny Dykstra, no, late Bush era. Yeah. He was there was 100 articles about how Lenny Dykstra, because he had this reputation of being like not the brightest guy in the world. You know, he was like this, just like your typical meathead ball player. But then, oh, bro, he's a financial genius. He was kind of like...
No, those, and to be fair, Dan...
He's kind of like the mainstream sports version of JBL.
No, but Ann from 1985 to 1998 has estimated earnings from baseball alone were $35 million.
Yeah, he's played good back. He played his entire career in two big markets. You know, he played in Philadelphia.
Well, and he
kind of
hit
New York.
The early peaks in free agency for sports.
Yeah, he was right there.
Guys started. Yeah,
he was right there when the money was just starting to peak in baseball. The you know, the first free agency peak.
Yeah, because we just hit another peak. They're doing pretty well.
Well, when free agency first came in 76 or 77, I can't remember if it was 76 or 77. The rules were extremely complicated, and there was still a bunch of teams who were like, well, we don't need these. By,
well,
like, 85 or 86, every team in baseball kind of realized they needed it, and then that's when they did collusion. And then they got caught colluding, and so they had to pay a huge penalty to all the players, and so Lenny's right there in the middle of that.
Yeah, and Lenny played, what, Philadelphia and New York?
Yeah, he played in the two of the biggest markets.
Especially back then when, like, those markets mattered so much more.
And he was on their two World Series teams, because he was on the Philadelphia team that won the World Series, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so like he was in two of the bigger markets for building your brand. He had national exposure from that. So Dykstra was a guy who made a lot of money in endorsements, regardless of how good he was or how dumb he was, whatever.
And he had a great nickname. That was one of the peaks of baseball nicknames, because his nickname was Nails.
Yeah. And he's got a cool name. Like, Dykstra is a fun name to say. Lenny Dykstra. Like, that rolls off like a New Yorker's tongue. Like what? Like a slice.
Hey, his name is Dykstra. I don't know why I gave him a
Chicago accent. Lenny Dykstra.
I gave him a Chicago
Dykstra
accent.
Dykstra fucking sucks, Mike.
I don't know why. Freaking I don't know why you said New York and then I gave him a Chicago accent. Hey, come over here, man.
Dykstra on the DeBaz.
Come over here, Margie. Dykstra's at the plate.
No, but he had a name that you could remember. Like, in terms of advertising, you want a name like Lenny Dykstra. That kind of pops out on your commercial. Like, here's Lenny Dykstra for Shoals foot odor powder, you know?
Shoals foot powder.
But it's a name that pops out. So, like, it makes sense that Dykstra not only would make money, but would, like, have brand recognition in the business world. Right, Dan?
Yes. Absolutely.
But then this guy... Yeah,
then this big thing post-career was car washes, right? Didn't he own, like, three or four car washes?
He also dropped $20 million on Wayne Gretzky's old house.
Yeah.
Snuck a fortune into a private jet, pledged millions to fund his magazine. Let's talk about his magazine real quick.
Yeah.
His magazine was called Players Only. It was a magazine created in, what, the aughts?
Yeah.
Like, late.
This is pre-housing crisis credit crunch. Mm-hmm. Like, this is one of those things that as it's happening, you're like, okay, this is a sign that this entire economy is going to collapse. Because...
But post like, magazine boom. Like, at this point, we've seen a lot of magazines die.
Oh, at this point, people are already talking about the publishing collapse.
Yeah. So, Dykstra...
The death of print is a thing people are talking about.
So, he creates a magazine that was focused on helping high-paid athletes live the dream. So, not only have you made a magazine just for athletes, which is like 1% of the American population.
Like less than 1%.
Who consider athletes. Like, and I'm talking about a guy who's like really serious about his like basketball league. Or like a runner or something. Marathon runner. Whatever. And he's going to focus on high paid athletes. Which is what? Half of a percent? Of a percent?
Yeah, this isn't even for like the minor league guys.
We have a lot, like... In theory, America has a lot of highly paid athletes. Because even a minor league guy's making $500,000 a year. That's a lot of money.
What are you talking about?
What are minor league guys?
Minor league guys get paid like $15,000 a year.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah, if you're working poor if you're a minor league baseball player. Now, there if you go. Are somebody who they earmarked to be a star, mm-hmm. who like they, like if when Bryce Harper got drafted,
yeah.
you get a huge signing bonus. Everything in baseball is a signing bonus. So if you're like a guy they don't really see as a prospect, but they're drafting you and like, well, let's see what he's got. You might get like a $50,000 signing bonus, which is still life. You know, that's, hey, I just got $50,000 up front, but you're only going to make $15,000 for the year. So, you know, it all comes down to like how you spend that bonus when you're in the minors. And how you save your bonus. And if you're like, you know, Steven Strasburg, when I think I remember this correctly, he got like $12 million worth of signing bonus.
Okay, yeah.
But his minor league contract was only like $15,000. And then if you get called up to the majors, you get the, you know, you suddenly get the, you know, the major league minimum. And if you've ever been in the majors, your salary... Like, if you're on opening day playing in the majors and then they send you down, you still make your major league contract. Does that make sense? So yes. Everything in baseball is about how much money did you make it to the majors.
But anyway.
But a minor league ball player, I don't know why I got so upset about that.
Yeah.
Like minor league ball players do not make anything.
No, it does actually like enforce our point here. Even a minor league player has no reason to read this magazine that like literally less than 2% of them will read to begin with, even if they made that money. This is a magazine made for millionaires who do a specific job.
And there are lots of magazines that cater towards extremely wealthy people. Yeah. I have my boss's sister runs a magazine in Silicon Valley. And I bet you they probably have less than 5,000 subscribers, but they do well because it's all about rich people. Like it's a magazine entirely about rich people and doing rich people things in Silicon Valley and what's the best rich people things to do. So there's just enough rich people in it, like out there that you can make a profitable business off selling them a magazine. But you're also talking about a group of people who are likely to want to read a magazine to begin with. When I think of people who would be likely to subscribe to a print publication, I do not think of athletes, pro athletes. It's just not, I've known a few pro athletes, semi-pro athletes, and they just never strike me as somebody who wants to leap through a magazine.
No, because you know what you're doing if you're a pro athlete? You're literally studying, these days, you're watching film, more than likely. You're figuring out how to get better to make more money. Or B, you're enjoying the spoils of like what you've like worked your whole life to go get. You're not going to read a magazine to figure out how to spend that money. You're going to see it and buy it because you're around. That's also like the thing that like a lot of people don't get about like rich culture is like rich people just see stuff and buy it. They don't like research it. They just buy it.
Yes. And that's a lot of people have tried to do this kind of magazine. It's like, well, it's going to be like a guide to how to be a rich guy. And it's like rich people, like people who get that kind of money don't really care about
their guys. No, and if you're like a working class or a stiff or even a white collar working guy, you're probably going to read like Maxim or Playboy around this time to like see what rich people do.
Yeah, there's plenty of magazines. Like the idea that there's something that athletes would need above and beyond just generic rich guy. That there's a market among athletes to read a magazine that's just about what an athlete would want. Instead of just, well, if I'm interested in those sort of things, I'll just pick up this magazine here. Is insanity. I mean, it is complete insanity.
Dan, let's move on. I'll talk about this. This is not an athlete. It's an organization. Remember this one. ESPN, the restaurant. ESPN Zone.
Oh, but we gotta finish up Lanny Dykstra.
Oh, so
he lost literally everything. Yeah,
the story goes a few places for Dykstra. Sorry. he lost a ton of money. What got accused of what?
Embezzlement.
Insider trading, or
he definitely went to. Didn't he end up?
He went to jail for something with money.
Wasn't it a Ponzi scheme?
Yes.
I feel like there was a Ponzi element to it somewhere. But yeah, he's completely broken, went to jail.
No, Lenny Dykstra's the guy who, like, Barstool podcasts call up to, like, make fun of. Because he's, like, a toothless old, like, felon. At this point. This is to say, he's not spent his $32 million well.
Yeah. He, you know, the economy crashed and down went Lenny Dykstra.
No. But then, actually, before I
get into... Hey, he just got some charges dropped against him.
There you go. Before we kind of get into... Because like, I want to do a... Before we kind of get done, I want to get into, like, a subsection of, like, all the dumb stuff ESPN has done. To, like, kind of outside of the sports world for a second.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to mention, like, a couple of athletes who maybe, like, did some dumb stuff, but weren't failures. So let's start with this one first. Shaq. In his entire movie career.
Yeah, Shaq has tried a lot of shit. And he eventually settled on, I'm just charming and good enough to get through this commercial with the general. But anything longer than that, and I'm in trouble.
But, you know, we joke around, Dan, but, like, today, Kazam is, like, a well-known movie. Like, he's probably still getting paid off Kazam.
What's that thing that they got it confused with? Kazam,
starring Sinbad.
Yeah. Where people, like, insist that's a thing that exists, that's real. And they...
Yeah.
And so instead they just decide that there's a conspiracy where time travelers are changing the past just because they can't admit that they're wrong and that Kazam's not a real thing.
A couple of other athletes who had failed moves. Well, not even failed. These were all pretty successful. What Jordan did, Space Jam.
I believe that was a success.
I think culturally it was a success. So
we were children, so we were the ones who that was supposed to be for. So we may not,
that's what I never get.
We may not have a good handle on how well that thing actually did.
Yeah, no, it's not a good movie. But, like, it was a kids' movie, so, like, it wasn't supposed to age well.
Also, this is before kids' movies were supposed to be good.
Yeah.
Like, they were just supposed to be Pixar. For kids.
Yeah. Well, no, because Disney made some good kids' movies before that. Did they?
Actually, I have not watched any of those Disney movies I watched as a kid, so I cannot report on if they're actually
good. What was the first good Disney kids' movie that, like, adults liked, probably? Like Aladdin?
Beauty and... Well, the first one is the one that I didn't watch as a kid because I was a boy. What is it called?
Cinderella.
No, the one... Under the Sea.
Oh, Little Mermaid.
Little Mermaid. That was the first big one. And then it was Beauty and the Beast. And then it was Lion King. No, then it was Aladdin, then Lion King. So that's the order. The Little Mermaid, and then Beauty and the Beast, and then Aladdin, and then Lion King, and then that they had all those in a row.
Yeah. One I think real quick, the most successful former athlete to be to have the most like growth in terms of personal wealth and business. So like we're not counting Michael Jordan or LeBron when we say this. Like a guy who was. Took his pro athlete money and turned it into even more.
His match.
No, Ulysses Lee Bridgman.
The hell is that?
Exactly. Drafted by the Lakers in 1975, his peak salary he ever earned was $350,000 a year. So, Dan, this guy's worth $400 million 2 years ago.
You know, that may not actually be true, because I bet I know who the actual person is who made the most out of his athletic career.
Okay, well, this guy, though, you know how he made his money, Dan?
How's that?
He got in on Wendy's franchises.
Oh, he owns, that's the key.
He owns over 160 locations across the Midwest, and that's how he made his money. Now, so, like, if you're an athlete listening to this for some reason, go buy, like, a Zaxby's or Chick-fil-A right now. Right, Chick-fil-A's
you might have, late to yeah, you've missed it. You missed it.
With yeah, go get Zaxby's. Zaxby's is the next thing from the South.
I love that Caribbean jerk, I gotta say. But you know who the guy who did the best out of an athletic career is, right?
Yeah. Who's that?
It's good old Ty Cobb, America's favorite racist, because he married the Coca-Cola heiress.
Oh!
So, like, he married the daughter of, like, Pemberton's daughter. Like, the guy who founded Coca-Cola.
Yeah, the guy with the beard.
Yeah, he married that guy's daughter, and so he, like, all of his kids are, like, the founder, like, they're the ones who made all the money off Coca-Cola.
There you go.
So, I'm betting all of Cobb's offspring are, like, just barely functioning, just, like, not enough chromosomes, just that they can barely form sentences and they have more money than anyone will ever know what to do with.
Let's jump. Let's jump to some ESPN failures. Before we get ready to wrap up. All right. First up, I'm gonna go through a few different things ESPN did, like in the mid-aughts when they had like all that money from carrying Disney. Disney was very generous to ESPN.
Well, because it was literally the only thing making money on the TV.
Yeah. Especially. So, in the odds.
And they had the big failure of Euro Disney. So, like, the parks weren't even doing that well. The movies had slowed down because Pixar had started eating their ass, you know, and obviously they made money.
This is before Pixar. They bought Pixar.
Well, they owned a piece of it, but the Disney movies that they made, that they got all the profits from, were doing terribly at this point.
Yeah.
And their television channel, like, the ABC was doing shitty. ABC Family was the biggest financial disaster in cable television.
No, and this is around...
But, like, ESPN was making so much money that it didn't matter.
Yeah, and this is around the time, like, TGIF died.
Yeah, so TGIF died. They stupidly thought that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was going to be a thing they could bank on forever instead of this is just a fad. You know, this is a game show fad.
Let's figure out how to sell this to someone else to make as much money as possible.
Yeah, they turned down... They bought the pilot and then turned down Survivor. And then they also turned down 24. Like, they had 24. It was like their in-house producers produced it, and then they turned, you know, they let it get away.
But they had the Golden Goose ESPN.
And
ESPN
was so successful that it didn't matter.
This is like when it's weird living in the world today to understand, like, because ESPN's so established now. But, like, 20 years ago, they were just breaking through, man. And, like, no one, like, really took them seriously.
Like, ESPN didn't even have, like, the football all year round. Like, they had to split half the season with Turner.
Yeah.
Like, half the Sunday night games would be on TNT and the other half would be on ESPN.
Yeah. So ESPN had to figure out, like, what are we going to do with our brand? They're like, well, let's expand. Let's do stuff. This is a successful movie. Successful for the time. It didn't really last, but whatever. They partnered up with NBA 2K and NFL 2K. Became ESPN 2K. And I believe before that, they put the ESPN name on football games to kind of get that brand out there.
I believe they were on Game Day, weren't they?
Yeah, they did a few, actually. There was actually a couple. Like, the most successful was probably ESPN NBA 2K. Like, 2K6, I think, had the ESPN moniker.
I believe the last 2K football game.
Mm-hmm.
Was ESPN. Was ESPN co-branding.
And it's still one of the... At the time, it might still be, actually, one of the best-selling football games ever.
I don't think it sold well. It was very good.
No, it sold well because it costed $20.
Oh, right. That was the one that was super cheap. Yeah, but that's the year I got them both because it was so cheap.
But if you're ESPN, you don't care what you're selling it for because your brand's on it. You just want to
see also, like, you're just, yeah, you're not the one who loses your ass if it...
No, you made money, and you're making more money from your brand being there. But ESPN tried some other stuff. Dan, I want to talk about this really quick. Did you ever have ESPN the truck come through your town?
I do not remember ESPN the truck.
This happened to me. It parked at the local Walmart in Macon, Georgia. And it was a truck that just... looked like an ESPN production truck. And you walk through and you could see, like, some ESPN memorabilia. You got a keychain. It didn't really make any sense. all my friends made fun of it. I was so hyped to go see it, though, I'll be honest. I thought it was the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. I had a keychain from it that I no longer have anymore. I miss it. ESPN also had this, ESPN the phone.
Man, everybody was trying to get, like, those brand... Was it a branded Nokia?
Yeah. It was a phone. I think it was Nokia or something. But you would hit a button on your phone, and it would take you right to ESPN.com. Which was wild in, like, 2004.
Yeah. God, that was probably with BlackBerry. That was probably, like, a co-promotion.
But probably the most famous /... still, I think, kind of going in some places. The ESPN Zone restaurant.
I went to an ESPN Zone. It was not great.
Did you go to one of these?
Yeah.
I went to the one in Vegas and didn't hate it.
I think I went to the one in Biloxi, Mississippi.
Actually, I went to two. Went to the one in Atlanta as well. But, I mean, it was a a neat concept, but, like, the food kind of sucked. It was probably overpriced because you're paying for the brand name. But, like, the setup was pretty cool. Do you remember that? Like, with the couches? With
yeah.
The, like,
this was a... I want somebody to explain why people thought this was going to be a big thing. Yeah. But, these weird theme restaurants, these were just super popular for some reason. Or not really popular. Well, I guess it's Hard Rock Cafe.
Hard Rock. You Plant Hollywood.
Hard Rock.
We'll talk about it in a second. All-Star Cafe.
Planet Hollywood lost its ass.
Yeah.
The only one of those that ever were successful was Hard Rock Cafe. All the people who tried to ape it just failed miserably. But everyone tried. It was like, oh, it's a Hard Rock Cafe for movies. It's a Hard Rock Cafe for music. Well, Hard Rock Cafe is a Hard Rock Cafe for music. But Hard Rock Cafe for sports. Hard Rock Cafe for a specific kind of sport. a Hard Rock Cafe for ESPN sports. Everybody tried those, and they all just ate dick because they were terrible food. The food was just disgusting in these places.
No, that was always the key with those places was, like, it wasn't a well-run restaurant.
Like
they did everything else right, but, like, the most important part.
I mean, it was, like, sub, like, Olive Garden, Applebee's.
No, it was like eating at a Buffalo Wild Wings or something. Like, cause that's what those places are now.
It was not as good as Buffalo Wild Wings was actually better.
It's not. Buffalo Wild Wings is awful.
I'm not telling you that you're wrong, but Buffalo Wild Wings was better than Planet Hollywood or NASCAR Cafe. Because the one
Maybe
thing about Buffalo Wild
NASCAR
Wings
Cafe.
is that their wings are actually okay. Like, they're not terrible wings. They picked one thing that they kind of do half competently instead of trying to have, like, a menu of 17 pages. That they absolutely cannot do.
And that was the issue with, like, the ESPN grill, our ESPN zone, was, like, they didn't just be like, hey, we do wings and beer, and, like, here's a cheeseburger. They're like, here's a $45 prime rib that's, like, awful. Because, like,
yeah,
we would have
like cooked in water, you know. Here's a steamed steak.
Yeah. Also, Dan, did you know this existed? There's still today, foregoing Fox Sports Grill.
What?
Yeah.
There's no way that's a thing.
Well, Google it. There's one in San Diego and I think in Seattle. Still going.
Are you just going there? What was the name of their original big host? Was it like Jack Van Egan or something?
I don't know.
I almost said Jack Van Impey, and he was a strange televangelist. So I don't think that's right.
But yeah, that's a real-life restaurant that you can go to.
God, I want to go to the Fox Sports Zone.
And
it's just going to be like 30-year-old reruns of Jim Rome.
Clones.
The Last Word with Jim Rome.
Friend of the show, Wes Destiny. West Coast Wes attended one of those a few years ago, actually. A Fox Sports Grill. He said it was pretty mediocre.
You don't say.
And the menu, like, has nothing themed with Fox Sports. It's just, like, you put Fox Sports brand on, like, a Buffalo Wild Wings or something.
God.
There's no, like,
but
Jim
even
Rome,
then, that's probably better
Nacho
than the ESPN
Tots.
Zone was. Like, a Buffalo
well,
Wild
the ESPN
Wings
Zone have,
decent,
like,
is, like, half decent.
Do they at least do, like, Dan Patrick's queso dip or something?
Yeah, that's all it was, like, ESPN personalities, like the Stuart Scott Booyah Burger. Like,
yes! No, the Stuart Scott Booyah Sauce with the Bloomin' Onion. Fox Sports Grill has none of that.
No.
It's just like chicken wings.
Because Fox Sports has, to this day, never developed a single piece of talent that anybody's ever heard of. Katie Nolan
the best...
is the closest thing they ever did, and they immediately ran her off.
How dare you insult the memory of the best damn sports show, period.
I forgot about that.
Remember
that's
when...
right. That was their greatest thing they ever produced. They had
remember because they did, like, Best Damn. Best Damn became, like, a brand for Fox Sports.
Yeah, it was, like, when those clip shows were very popular. Like, yes. I love the 90s or whatever. It's like the best damn top 10. Best damn football players of, you know, who got arrested for domestic violence.
Yeah. You know. This would be fun to look at in the future. Like, NFL Network did that when they
launched. Yeah, basically, that's all the NFL Network is right now, if you watch the NFL Network.
But that's all they should be.
It's just like the top 10 reasons that, you know, it's okay to not pay Dana Stubblefield. I don't know. And then it's just like a group of like talking head dudes who are like, you know.
It's just Ray Lewis.
From New York, who are always, all of them are from like New York or Boston.
Yeah. Well, because that's where NFL Network's located. So like they're not going to pay to fly out a guy.
And there's just, or like some dude who does like Philadelphia radio, as if anyone gives a shit about who's on the radio in Philadelphia. And he's just like, Donovan McNabb, yeah, he threw up once. And that's it. What? And they move on to the next thing.
Real quick, what's the saddest sports talk radio town?
Buffalo.
I've never listened to Buffalo. That'll be my duty for tonight, or this week.
My feeling about Buffalo in general is that it's an irritating place, but because all sports leagues started in the Northeast, Buffalo just has a history in every professional sports league. Even though Buffalo is about the size of Fayetteville, North Carolina. Like, it's about the same size as Wilmington. It has
less sadder industry, though, than like Charlotte
sports. Sadder. Way sadder.
I don't know.
There's things to do in Charlotte. There is literally Buffalo is literally nothing but like dead factories.
Doesn't everything in Charlotte close by 11?
Bro, it's better than stuff not even being open.
Yeah, I guess the Chili's does close at 10 in Buffalo.
But Buffalo doesn't even have a thing to open. It's just like, oh, let's walk around the ruins of a former industrial city. Like, there's nothing there. And there's like 12 people there.
Before we get done here on this beautiful St. Patrick's Day, anything else pops out to you in terms of best athlete fails? I got two more.
Hit me with them.
Real quick, two video games.
Oh, man.
We all remember Shaq Fu. I'm not going to count Shaq Fu as like...
I've actually decided who my favorite is, but you need to go. Because you need to
Shaq Fu, not a failure, because like they had a sequel and it probably made money. Remember Michael Jordan's video game?
I remember when Michael Jordan pulled out of the labor union to make a game. Like he didn't pull out of the union. He pulled out of the union licensing deal. So for years, for years when you bought NBA games, Michael Jordan wouldn't be in them. It would be like number 89, the player.
Barry Bonds did the same thing.
Yeah, and it didn't work out for him either.
Yeah, Jordan ended up working because NBA 2K was like, yeah, we'll pay to have Michael Jordan.
That's not true. You have forgotten who it was who backed the Brinks truck up for him.
Who was it?
It was NBA Live. When 2K started kicking their ass, EA's big response was, we're the first game with Jordan since 1992.
What year was that?
I think it was like NBA Live 2001.
Okay, because I thought Jordan was in like NBA 2K on the Wizards.
I don't think he was. I don't think it was, because that was NBA, that was that
year. Are you
NBA
sure Live. They weren't trying to kick, like, 989's ass, not 2K?
No, it was definitely 2K, because it was one of the early 2000s NBA Live games.
Okay, because you remember 2K had a Jordan, like, Jordan was on the cover in, like, 08.
Right, but that was years later. This was the first time he'd been in a video game as a licensed player.
Okay, because I thought he was in...
Well, he's in the early 90s games. Like, he was in Tecmo Super Basketball.
Well, I've got NBA 2K in my Dreamcast right now. We could see if he was on. I'm not going to boot it up.
I'm almost guaranteeing you he's not in. It's like the player.
Wow. Well, I remember Barry Bonds did that. And famously, Kevin Millar was never in any MLB games because he was a scab.
Yeah, he was a scab. He wasn't allowed in the players' union.
Yeah, but him and Jason Veritek, I think.
I'm not. It's not Veritek, because Veritek's in all those games.
Okay, it was just Millar then. Yeah.
Yeah, but Kevin Millar was a scab.
And a few other guys. Like there's a couple of.
And he didn't even get to play because of a court shot down baseball using replacement players. So he he had signed the deal, that booted him out of the Players Association, and so he could never make. Yeah.
I get if you're Millar, you're just trying to like. I don't love scabs, but like a lot of times, I think they're unfairly viewed. That's gotta suck if you're Millar though, because like that's at least a couple of like what probably 30-40K you could have made
over the course, especially since he was a featured player on all those Red Sox teams.
No, on a Red Sox team that was what
very popular.
He probably played on there for 3-4 years.
Yeah, but I remember Barry Bonds' fake name in the MLB The Show games.
No, what was it?
Reggie Stocker.
I remember going in to change him and like. You change the name first, and then it's right over to color palette. Because, like, they made that guy, like, as white as possible.
I remember him being black.
Maybe I'm thinking of, like, MLB, like, EA or something.
But yeah, I always played The Show. And his everything about him was exactly the same. His batting stance was the same. It was his elbow pad.
I think he was rated 99 in, like, MVP baseball.
But he was exactly like Barry Bonds, except his name was Reggie Stocker and his number was 35.
Yeah.
Instead of 25.
There's probably an example. Can you think of like a modern athlete before we get out of here who's failed recently?
There's the king of all failures. There's the man, the myth, the legend. The biggest fucking idiot failure in the history of sports, and that is
Bill Brown,
Curt Schilling.
Our boy.
Yeah, Curt Schilling. Do you remember his first foray into video games? Because I owned this game.
What? I don't know this game. He was a big fan of like some MMO.
Okay, this is before that. This was his first foray into games.
Command and Conquer.
No, it was Curt Schilling High Heat Baseball.
Yes!
And I think eventually they dropped his name off of it, but he was on all the covers. But the big thing with High Heat Baseball is that it was supposed to be the biggest baseball simulation.
It's so real.
And the pitching, like, and nowadays, like, if you play The Show is very realistic, especially with, like, pitch physics. Of like, well, this is how this pitch goes, this is how this pitch goes. But with High Heat, the big thing with it is, like, before High Heat, most of these games, like, everybody threw a curveball. If you threw a curveball was a curveball. There wasn't like, okay, here's Pedro's curveball, or here's this is how this guy throws a slider.
No,
I think this guy's slider.
Oh, with like, here's a circle harder, curve.
Yeah.
Here's a circle curve. Yeah.
High Heat was like the first baseball game that I can remember where it was like, all right, well, this guy throws a two-seam fastball, and it breaks down like a sinker. Well, this guy throws a two-seam fastball, and it breaks laterally more. And this guy throws a slider, and it breaks more up and down. And this guy throws one, and it breaks hard, hard laterally. Like, they had different types of ways of throwing a breaking pitch instead of everybody's breaking pitch being the exact same and everybody's changeup being the exact same. And so if you were a nerd for that kind of stuff, it was cool. However, the graphics were horrifying to look at, and they made you sick. They made your eyes hurt. They were so bad. It was not a great game for like the average person to want to play baseball games. But I've always thought that MLB The Show probably took High Heat Baseball and were like, all right, let's make a good game out of this.
The ad campaign with Sammy Sosa. It's so real.
But Curt Schilling, that was his first big foray into video games. And then he decided he wanted to be a publisher. He didn't just want to be heavily involved in licensing his name or whatever. He wanted to publish a video game. And I don't know if our audience has a lot of crossover with video game fans, but there was a very popular video game series that I think is still going, but It was a very, very popular video game called World of Warcraft. Now, I'm of the age that when I was a freshman in college, I had multiple people who I shared a dorm with, especially because I went to a school where it's primarily known as an engineering school. I had multiple people who lived in my dorm who failed out of school because they spent all their time playing World of Warcraft. And it's, you know, if you've never played an MMO RPG, I've not played one, but they're basically, you have millions of people playing at the same time. You can choose to team up with them or fight against them. And it seems very complicated and not very fun to me. I think there was a South Park episode making fun of World of Warcraft. I'm not sure. It's not my bag. But World of Warcraft made more money than God. I do know. That's what I do know. And then everybody was trying to make, well, if World of Warcraft is this popular, why don't I make my version of World of Warcraft? And it was like versions of it set in space and different kinds of games that are basically just World of Warcraft with little tweaks. And what everybody found out eventually after a few years is that the only one of those that anybody wanted to play was World of Warcraft. Nobody wanted to play World of Warcraft made by a different studio. Because the reason why they only wanted to play one is because that's where all the people were. And it was a multiplayer game. So why would you want to play that kind of game where there's not as many people playing? And we're now at a I would compare that now with like battle royale shooters, where like everybody wants to make the next Fortnite, but they're probably not going to because the only Fortnite that anyone's going to do is Fortnite. You know, because that's the one everybody's plays.
Or just like Call of Duty will come back again.
Like with games that are based on multiplayer, there's not really room for multiple versions of that. Because the only, like, the one that has all the people on it is the one that's going to be successful.
Quick side note here. Did you see what a Call of Duty franchise is going for?
They're selling it?
You can buy a Call of Duty, like, esports franchise team.
Oh, how much?
$20
million. Yeah, there's definitely not a bubble in that market. Esports is not a bubble.
You know, like, there was I think it's League of Legends or something. They're like, there are teams selling for $30 million. Maybe that's just the thing now, though.
No, it's the thing that everyone's just going to lose their butt. Because you've got a bunch of venture capital people who think this is, who are looking at esports and thinking, man, if this can be the next NBA and we can get in for 20 or 30 million and then sell it for a billion. You know, everything's been warped by the fact that Steve Ballmer paid like $2 billion for the Clippers. And so that's gotten everybody trying to find the next thing like
that. No, and like the dirty secret with that was like the Clippers should have been worth that the whole time. It's just they were ran by the worst owner in sports history.
The worst, yeah. Like the biggest idiot slash, like he was not just an incompetent businessman, he was also a hardcore racist.
And he like a weirdo too, like not even like it goes bad, like bad at every aspect of being like a person.
Like literally the dumbest man in the world.
Yeah. Who, like, do you know the Clippers? You've ever heard the story on that before we kind of get done here?
Oh, yeah.
Of all time.
Let's put a pin in the Curt Schilling thing. We'll come back.
Okay, put it, then I want to get to the Clippers story. Actually, no, let me tell that now, then we'll put a pin on the Curt. Did you know the Clippers, when they were in Buffalo, essentially were traded with the Celtics?
Yeah, the owners just traded their teams.
Yeah, the owners just traded. It's like the weirdest story in like sports history. Like literally the best franchise in the history of the NBA, like almost got moved to San Diego.
Well, you know,
and like the guy who got it like was one of the not a great owner, and like turned like what like $3 million into 50 in like 70s money.
Yeah. Well, you've also heard the baseball story of the two pitchers on the, I think they were on the Yankees or the Padres. It was either the Yankees or the Padres, and they traded wives. Which is...
Was that Garth Brooks?
It was a fascinating thing. Both of their marriages ended in divorce. Hmm. I don't think their wives thought it was great that they traded
Yeah. But Dan, let's close out.
Well, yeah, but with Kurt Schilling. So he decides he's going to make the new World of Warcraft. And it's important, and I give this context because so many different video game studios were trying to make the next World of Warcraft. There was like World of Warcraft with Star Wars people, everybody was trying to do this. But he thought, because he loves World of Warcraft so much, that he would do the best job of it. And he goes out and he solicits investment. And one of the things he ends up doing is he goes to the state of Rhode Island, where he's obviously very popular because, you know, he was what he did with the Red Sox, the Bloody Sock, the first World Series, whatever. He's obviously a very big person in the New England area. And so he goes to the state of Rhode Island. He says, look, I'm going to move my new game studio I've started up to Rhode Island in exchange for all these tax benefits and all this profit sharing that you'll get when the game comes out if you just give me all this free shit, basically. And the state of Rhode Island, because, you know, states are pretty stupid when it comes to these kinds of deals, said, yeah. And of course, the fact that it was Kurt Schilling is what helped grease the wheels for him to get this deal. And you'll never believe this, but it turns out he was an incompetent who didn't know what he was doing, and their video game didn't make any money, and the state of Rhode Island lost like $50 million.
No, the video game, feel like, wasn't even like finished or something?
It
or
never
am I wrong
got
here?
Finished because he did yeah. not, because as Kurt Schilling is apparently too stupid to realize, video game programmers live in a very specific part of the country for a reason. And the reason is that video game production is a very precarious career. And so the idea of relocating to the entire opposite side of the country from where all the other video game studios is a really bad idea for you personally. Because it's like...
No, because like,
you
realistically,
know, realistically like, everybody who works on video games, you work at a studio for like 3 years and then you move on to the next place.
No.
You never stay in one place.
And they're all mostly in like Silicon Valley, Vancouver, or like Austin.
And the reason is because there's other markets. Companies there. So if
yeah.
you know,
but, like,
your
issue with like Schilling's looking at
is, you
yeah, real quick,
somewhere.
Dan. Real quick. The issue with like what Schilling's looking at too is like it's not like New York or Boston has like a big like programmer, like pool to pull from. All these people are on the West Coast. So, like, in terms of like what you're gonna pay for relocation, you're already almost what seven figures in at this point,
right?
Just to move your work,
just getting talent to come work in Rhode Island,
yeah,
is prohibitively expensive, even without tax breaks.
Yeah, because this is a bigger point too. This talent isn't in, like, New York City or Boston. It is literally on the other side of the country. It makes no sense to design a video game in Rhode Island.
And if you're going to be that far away from the entire rest of your industry, guess how much money you're going to request? A lot. So the so the cost of producing this game, which I think was called Kingdoms of Alamar, was absurdly expensive. Far past the point of it making any financial sense. Then you lump in, you know, the fact that Rhode Island was expecting it to make all this money for them. And this was just a complete boondoggle that resulted in Kurt Schilling going bankrupt. He lost basically everything. And then Rhode Island lost, like, I think $100 million when it was all said and done. So he almost bankrupted a state, like not just himself. And then the coda on this is that the thing that kind of financially saved Kurt Schilling is that he got a deal being on ESPN as a talking head on Baseball Tonight, which at least gave him a salary so he could have some money coming in. And ESPN took a ton of heat for it because it's like, this guy is a fraudster who defrauded an entire state. Why did you hire him? And then he managed to get himself fired because he just couldn't stop saying racist stuff online.
Yeah.
So now
so
Kurt Schilling is literally broke, and nobody, and like he lives in a fucking apartment somewhere when he was one of the most, when he was one of the richest and most successful athletes of his day, and now he has nothing.
Wow. Can we do some breaking news?
Hit me.
How do you feel about Tennessee as a 2 seed? Probably deserved, though, because they lost to Auburn today.
Well, I mean, as long as all the 1 seeds are from the ACC.
Well, thus far it's been Virginia and Duke.
Yeah, Carolina.
Mm, I mean, who's the fourth? Gonzaga or something? Florida State shouldn't be a 1 seed. Are you kidding me?
They made the finals of the ACC.
Just give it Auburn or Kentucky. Give it to Kentucky.
I think it should probably be Florida State.
No, Florida State. Are you kidding me? From the second best basketball conference?
I'm pretty sure even you can't make that joke this year. The ACC was that much better than everybody.
We're better at basketball now.
This is not the year to make that joke.
Then y'all.
This is not the year for that joke.
No, only because Zion's at Duke. If Zion wasn't at Duke...
Yeah, and UNC and
then Virginia, who got upset... Virginia literally is one of the worst 1 seeds of all time. UNC, they might be okay. We'll see.
Might be okay.
Are they better than Kentucky, Tennessee,
yes,
Auburn?
They're much better than Kentucky.
And are they better than Georgia next year?
Well, we probably won't ever know, because that's not how college basketball works. But yeah,
would you know? And you know who?
And Tennessee's coached by Rick Barnes. I've seen this. I've seen how this song ends.
One of the dumbest boys alive. Bless Rick Barnes. But no, Dan. To wrap it up here, put a little Blarney Stone on it. Curt Schilling, definitely one of the biggest failures to make a lot of money in sports and go into business, right?
Yeah. So I mean,
anyone else we can. Besides him and Dykstra and, Lewis and some of those other guys, if we talk about, where Jordan or Gretzky or Elway failed, those guys are still worth almost, hundreds of millions of dollars to this day. So they may have failed with restaurants or websites or something. They're doing good besides that while they're not here.
Yeah, Kirk Schilling's that classic, I'm not going to lose all my money because I'm a white guy. No, so he thought he was a lot smarter than he was.
So, but do you know what? You know what you want to talk about next week before we get out of here? Because I do, Dan.
Oh, hit me.
You ready?
I'm
March
ready
Madness. Let's talk some of the biggest upsets in March Madness history, baby. Let's talk March Madness. Why is this thing a big deal? How did it start to be? Let's kind of do the whole thing. March Madness. What's going on? What is March Madness? That's next week.
The history of the madness.
Yes.
Which I think was a Randy Savage DVD collection.
Yeah. But how did this become a thing? You know, because we don't think about that a lot. It's just something that's happened our whole lives. But why is March Madness a thing? I want to kind of go back and look at that. Why are we playing a big tournament? Why is it on TV? Yada, yada, yada. I want to kind of look at that.
I think it's an excellent choice. I'm all in it.
Yeah. No, and honestly, it's one of the biggest cultural things in American sports history. Because, you'll hear announcers talk about it, but it's true. This is something your grandma watches. March Madness is a big deal. It's up there with the Super Bowl and everything else.
It causes measurable productivity loss in America.
No. Corporations lose, billions or trillions over March Madness. It is a 2-week thing.
Yeah, it's not like the Super Bowl where just everybody calls in sick the day after. It's for 2 weeks. People aren't coming to work.
No, March Madness is like
just
a
sitting
really
in their
cool
cubicle with their laptop.
Yeah, March Madness is probably one of the coolest American sports things we do. We're gonna take a look at it next week, and I'm pretty excited to look because I've never really thought about why do we play all these tournaments in March? Why is it not like college football with bowl, why do we not have bowl basketball games or something weird? Why does this exist? And let's take a look at it, and that'll be next week.
I'm already looking forward to it.
Yeah, because you can't beat Mark. I mean, Dan, you're a North Carolina guy. I'm a guy who loves to gamble. It's the perfect marriage for people like us.
Exactly. As long as so, NC State makes it. If NC State doesn't make it, then I'm just gonna
Auburn
kill
Auburn
this whole subject, and we'll be talking about Tom Osborne's favorite bowel movements.
What was Tom Osborne's favorite fullback draw play?
Fullback trap. Get it right.
Excuse me.
His favorite play was the fullback trap. We all know
that. That's it for this special St. Patrick's Day episode. I apologize for drinking, but I'm not going to apologize for being Irish. I'm not Irish, but I am today. I'm wearing Irish face.
So you're, like, red-faced and splotchy?
I'm just yelling the N-word, yeah.
And on that note, kiss the Barney Stone and play the music, Jason.
And fuck you, Australia. Prayers for New Zealand.